Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, listeners. This is NWP Radio, a production of the National Writing Project. Today is July 22nd, 2010, and today we're visiting with some of the teacher consultants who have just participated in the Summer Institute, sponsored by the Holocaust Educators Network, which is itself sponsored by the Memorial Library in New York City. I'm your host, Elise Ivan-Adol, normally at the National Writing Project in Berkeley, California, and today at a Writing Project event outside of Austin, Texas. And I should say to everyone, broadcasting from my cell phone, so we'll hope that that all our technology holds up, because you surely want to hear this story. The story of the Holocaust Educators Network and its sponsor, the Memorial Library in New York City, is an amazing story, and we're going to hear more about that today. But part of that story is also the story of a growing partnership between the Holocaust Educators Network and the National Writing Project. And that partnership goes back to Sandra Pearl. Sandra is the author of an amazing book on Austrian soil, Teaching Those I Was Taught to Hate. I highly recommend the book, but also you should know that Sandra herself, who is co-director of the Memorial Library Summer Seminar on Holocaust Education, also happens to be one of the co-founders of the New York City Writing Project. So through her affiliation with those organizations, a partnership emerged between the Holocaust Educators Network and the NWP, which has now provided 24 fellowships for National Writing Project teacher consultants, many of whom are part of the Rural Sites Network, and then other Writing Project teachers who show a kind of critical need to be able to come and attend a summer seminar that is quite extraordinary on Holocaust education that's held every year in New York City. And that's part of that's the story we're going to look at today. Now, as always, if you're listening to us live, we invite you to join us in the chat room. We'll be posting materials, talk to your colleagues there. If you are listening to a downloaded episode, check the website for some of these links and comments from the chat room. So, listeners, tonight, join me in welcoming an amazing array of guests. We're going to have Jennifer Lemberg. She is co-director of the Memorial Library Summer Seminar on Holocaust Education. Along with her, we're going to have three participants from this summer's seminar, and they've just finished a few days ago. Anisha Hunter, who's from the Jacksonville State University Writing Project in Alabama. Paula Mercer-Mercier.
Mercier.
Mm-hmm. Mercier, thank you, from Plymouth Writing Project in New Hampshire. And Paul Sesmet from Oregon Writing Project, University of Oregon. They'll be joining us in the first half of the show to talk about the seminar and their experiences, and they are fresh from them. And then in the second half of the program, we're going to be welcoming Jan Hausman and Jason Murray, both of the Dakota Writing Project. Jan attended the seminar in 2008 and returned to her writing project to work with colleagues to develop an institute drawing on the learnings that she experienced at the Holocaust Educators Network and applying them directly to the history and circumstance of Native American experience in the United States. And along with Jan, we have Jason Murray, her colleague at the Dakota Writing Project, and who is himself Choctaw Chickasaw and is studying and teaching Native American literature in his professional life as well. And together they've developed and led this work, continuing work at their site at the Dakota Writing Project. So quite a full menu of wonderful guests, and thank all of you. Please, thank you for joining us tonight.
You're welcome.
Nice to be here.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So great to have you here, and we want to hear all these individual stories, but for our listeners for whom the program, this project, the Holocaust Educators Network, might be new, I think before we get started, Jennifer, could you tell us a bit, give us an orientation to what the Holocaust Educators Network is?
Sure. The Holocaust Educators Network, which, as you mentioned, is funded by the Memorial Library, is made up of teachers who have completed our summer seminars. We began in 2006 with a program for teachers who were in the local New York City area, and then we started to reach out to teachers in rural areas and, as you said, in areas of critical need, which we're seeing as a lack of resources or a problem of social justice in a specific area. So We've been going for about 5 summers now and worked with teachers in more than half of the United States. And our teachers stay in active contact with each other, and we find that belonging to the network really provides them with continuing support for their work in Holocaust and social justice education.
And earlier I just referenced an amazing story behind the Holocaust Educators Network. Tell us that story, the story of the Memorial Library and of Olga Vienyo.
Sure. It is an amazing story. As you said, Olga Langel was a Holocaust survivor. She survived Auschwitz, though she lost her 2 sons and her husband and her parents there. She wrote about her experience in a book called 5 Chimneys, which is an early testimony about Auschwitz. And after she reestablished herself and came to New York, she decided that she wanted to contribute in a meaningful way to Holocaust education and also an education that she hoped would help to prevent other genocides. So after she passed away, the board of the Memorial Library decided they really wanted to find a way to make this project to become a reality, and that's when they were introduced to Sandra Pearl. And her background, as you know, is very strong with the writing project, so they've all said that it was a kind of instant recognition that it was a perfect fit because Sandra's experience in teaching teachers as a member of the writing project really promised to help them be able to, you know, have a very wide reach in a way that was very pleasing to them. So that's the story.
Yeah. And actually, say a word or two about On Austrian Soil.
Sure. Well, Sandra, very honestly, I feel in that book, goes forward as, you know, a sort of typical writing project teacher to really reflect on some personal experiences. She talks in that book about having been raised to really hate people in Germany and Austria without ever having met them growing up Jewish in the United States. You know, there was a sense that these were the perpetrators, that they were all very bad across the board. And she then found herself in a program that required her to go to Austria to teach master's candidates and sort of went there, she said, pretending it was Paris in some way in her mind, I think in some kind of denial, and then got there and realized, you know, oh my goodness, I'm in this place, on this soil where these things happened. How am I going to deal with this? And the book really reflects her willingness to finally open up that question with her students in that class and also look into herself and ask, you know, what does it mean to have this kind of legacy of hate and how do we move forward after this multi-generational kind of experience has been passed down to us?
Yeah, very much a personal journey and also, though, the journey of a teacher. And Sandra, of course, is a writing teacher. Many people in the National Writing Project know her and her work as a writing teacher. And the book has a lot to say about writing and teaching. And writing is very much at the center of what the Holocaust Educators Network thinks about as well, another kind of way that there's a nice partnership. Could you talk a little bit about where writing fits in the thinking of the Holocaust Educators Network and by extension how it fits with the writing project?
Sure, absolutely. Right, so Sandra mentions in the book, and as you say, in general, there's a way that writing really fits especially well when you're trying to tackle difficult material. It can be very difficult for students and for teachers and adults to try to find your voice when you come to something so overwhelming. And so writing can be a way to finally, you know, find your way into this material and make sense of it for yourself, make sense of it for your students. And we find, therefore, that it's very much a part of our curriculum, and everyone's here, so they can talk about that maybe. We write very often, almost daily, if not always daily, and the students in the seminar spend time working on a completed piece. So they try to, on the one hand, repeatedly engage in writing with different pieces of the seminar, but then also to find a way to polish something that they can really take home with them where they've created a narrative that's helped them make sense of what they've done there. And they also spend time working on their teaching strategies, which often bring writing into this, using this material in their classrooms and thinking about, you know, what are ways we can do this better? What are ways we can work together to improve the strategies we have already?
Right. And, of course, it's one of our key beliefs across the network that when we, as teachers, do writing ourselves, when we tap that sense of what it is to be a writer, that that also informs how we can use writing in our classroom. You really see that working together, using it as a learning tool, as a participant, and then also these promising practices that we'd want to refine. Sounds like those are brought right together in the summer seminar.
Mm-hmm. We certainly try to do that. I think the way that we engage the participants, hopefully for us, we see this as an opportunity to model what we would ideally hope, you know, they will be doing in their classrooms. And, you know, certainly we learn from them also in learning about what they do already in the work they do at home.
So all of this is coming together in the Summer Institute, and in fact, we have some folks who just finished that 12-day Summer Institute a couple of days ago. So let's go ahead and bring in Paul and Paula and Anisha. You all really have just finished and really got it. So we're getting the freshest learning from you, and I think probably all the listeners are really eager to get a sense of what the experience was like. So let's start by hearing from each of you just a bit about, tell us why you decided to take up this opportunity and come to the Summer Institute. Paula.
Oh, thanks, Elise. This is Paula, and I think that the first thing I want to share is that as classroom teachers who read their email every day, we get and check our real mailboxes, we get an alarming number of invitations, offers, things that will make us the greatest teachers. But what I've learned over the last year, several years I participated in my local site, is that when something comes across that's from the National Writing Project, I tend to linger a little longer and check it out. And that was the case certainly with the Holocaust Educators Network pairing up. And so I looked at it more seriously, literally ran across the hall to a co-teacher. We do teach the Holocaust in my we team up the whole eighth grade that I teach in. We do quite a good, what I guess I thought before the seminar was an excellent job teaching the Holocaust to my students. And living in rural New Hampshire, perhaps the biggest challenge that we have is a socioeconomic diversity, and in particular, not necessarily how that, but that plus other things lead to a bullying culture. And we've been trying to connect the types of issues that began the Holocaust with our current history and particularly bullying. So I had hoped to gain some more insight into making those connections for my students, helping my students make those connections, and it certainly didn't let me down.
So you came both with a teacher's curricular piece. You teach the Holocaust, and then this personal context piece. Paul, how about you? What drew you to the network?
Well, I went to the Oregon, or I participated in the Oregon Writing Project 2 years ago, and the director called me at school one day and said, I have something for you, and I think you really like it, and it's about the Holocaust. And I said, you mean like Anne Frank? She said, yes, but it's more than that. And she mentioned social justice, and that's when my ears really perked up. And we talked, and she said, well, go ahead and apply for it. I said, okay, I'd be happy to. And the more I looked into it, and I got online and started looking at Holocaust stuff, and the more enthused about the whole idea I got. And then the other thing that draws me, of course, is the writing project itself, because I've already participated, and I know that I'm going to work with amazing teachers and look at some pretty amazing lesson plans, and teachers learning from each other, it's the best professional development there is, I think. So that's what drew me to it. And the experience for me was amazing. I can't say enough about it. I learned so much. The historical background, the ties to so many things that are going on in our society today that, that to me are a little bit dangerous. And reminiscent of what happened in Europe in the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to tie things in my curriculum to things that are happening today, because otherwise my students couldn't care less. And when I can show that this happened just recently in history and that there are parallels today, then sometimes the ears perk up a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah, and looking for a way to connect them to this content, sure.
Mm-hmm.
How about you? What drew you?
Well, the fact that the National Writing Project was involved was quite enough, but I was also motivated to attend out of a need to provide more depth to my social justice unit. I always begin with the study of the Holocaust because it's what I call a safe entrance. As my students are part of a very rural and very conservative community, entrenched in tradition. And as a result, students are rarely exposed to issues beyond what their parents deem as important, which mm-hmm. includes very little, if any at all, cultural diversity studies.
Mm-hmm. So each one of you had had some places in your curriculum where you were teaching about or teaching in connection to the Holocaust, but it sounds like also you really all three had your diverse context and your actual students in mind. I'm guessing that characterized everyone so that you had this kind of rich array of kind of local issues and local contexts and local curriculum. I'm guessing that was fascinating. Tell us some of the things that you felt that each of you that you felt you're taking away, that you learned and you'll be bringing back now that you've returned.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things?
Well, what
Paula,
I want to...
And, okay. I think that, first of all, to be have the opportunities to understand Jewish culture much, much more in depth than I would have in my regular day-to-day here in rural New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And by going to different services and enjoying Shabbat and klezmer music and meeting, you know, rabbis and cantors and things like that. And just really, so now, and visiting the Jewish Heritage Museum. And so I just really have a much greater depth of understanding about Jewish culture, both historically and today. So that's been really rich. But truthfully, one of my favorite things has been also talking with teachers from around the country.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I first went to my local writing project site and meeting teachers from around the state. Now to be able to participate on a national level and really having really cultural exchanges with people from the South and the coast and the other coast, not my coast, and things like that was really, really talking about teaching, but then also just talking about differences in the way that we live and similarities in the way that we live. I found that really rich and I assume lasting, in that we're all excited to connect again in November when we go down to Florida, and just different things like that has been really rich and rewarding for me personally.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and Paul, you were starting here. Tell us from you.
Paula mentioned bullying, and we have a pretty serious problem at our school. I think many middle schools experience this. We also have a growing gang problem in the high school to which our students go. Is experiencing some serious gang problems. And so when we speak about social justice, talking about what are the things that we all need in our lives, and distinguishing between needs and wants, the kids that I work with are all children of poverty, and so they understand the idea of needs. They understand needs that aren't met. What they don't understand is why that's happening. their viewpoint is very much get what they can as fast as they can, and everyone else, too bad. And the idea of empathy is just non-existent. They can't put themselves in other people's shoes. And so what I want to do is use the Holocaust as something that is so extreme that it grabs their attention. It's like a hook for them. And from there, I can hopefully show them what is the ultimate consequence, what can be the ultimate consequence of bullying, what can be the ultimate consequence of identifying a group of quote unquote others. You know, they're different than us. How do I teach children not to fear something that's different, but to embrace it and try it and look to understand and to celebrate diversity, basically. So to me, the Holocaust is I guess the archetypal story.
So underneath that exterior of presenting oneself as not having empathy or not feeling that, you're hoping that this curricular piece that you're working on can touch something beneath that and invite them to think differently and feel comfortable differently.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Anisha, you've shared in other contexts that your experience of what you've learned and taken away was very complex and personal.
Mm-hmm.
You've talked and written about some of this. Could you share some of that with the listeners?
Sure. I am, first of all, in awe of and have a great deal of respect and admiration for all that the Jewish community has done to ensure that their history is not forgotten and that teachers not only teach it in schools, but they teach it well and they teach it accurately. They own their history, and I think that's very important, and I have a great deal of respect for it. I entered the work at the Holocaust Educators Network as a student, and I wasn't aware that my personal guard was down. I was immediately aware that my double conscious lens, which I take from W.E.B. Du Bois, would reveal itself, and it caused me for a day or so to become overwhelmed with I just couldn't get over when I saw images of the Holocaust. I'd also see parallel images that I had seen in text. And when I researched slavery and the sights and the sounds that came to mind as I was reading the text, and they're all rooted in the same kind of evil as that of the Holocaust. So this caused me to face some personal demons regarding some recent experiences where I lost my advanced placement teaching class. My advanced placement class, because I was trying to incorporate African American history studies into my curriculum, which I do as a part of my introduction to text by African Americans, just to help build background prior to reading, just like I do with my other cultural literature units. So after reading the required text for the seminar in the first couple of days of discussions, I found myself rather angry that I hadn't done enough of my school and my profession even to force the issues that students learn and respect my history as an African-American, which is not the same as the Holocaust and should not be compared, but which also shares many parallels to those affected by genocide, for instance, the separation, the anxiety, rape, forced labor, the hate, the propaganda, the prejudice, and the long-term systemic oppression. So in addition, I wanted to say, too, that the free labor of African Americans is why America is a world leader, which makes our history very relevant and important. And the Holocaust Educators Network has empowered me to go forth and ensure that it's not only taught, but taught accurately and taught well. So I take with me from the HEN Network a new path in my social justice studies. I'm now equipped to lead my students safely in and safely out of challenging materials, as well as guarding them while we're studying that material.
Mm-hmm.
I've also learned to take care of myself as I study so that it's not so personal, but personal enough for me to be active when I should. I've learned from my colleagues a great number of ways to engage the students in writing about the Holocaust as well as other genocides and social injustices, as well as a way to kind of synthesize their emotions, as well as develop, like Paul said, empathy and respect for each other. So I was moved by, for instance, all the testimonies that we heard from the survivors, and I'll definitely use them as an example of how my students can exist in spite of adversity, as well as how they can overcome their circumstances. And then once they're safely over, they can also help others to do the same.
Yeah. I'm also hearing another dimension of learnings to take back in sort of learning from the whole model of how Holocaust education has been a project of so many to actually hold on to this history and make it something that can have an educational value, that watching how that happened provided you with some examples of how to go forward in your own practice. That's mm-hmm. incredibly powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It causes me to think, Jennifer had talked a little bit before about the importance of writing and how writing facilitates people's journeys and their own understanding, given this powerful content that you've all spoken to. And Anisha, you were a blogger and a writer and shared some of these experiences and some of their thinking through your writing, and that feels to me like another community building and knowledge building dimension. Paul, in an earlier conversation, you had mentioned how it affected your thinking to read Anisha's writing. Could you talk a little bit about it? It's because it's another way that writing is functioning in this.
Well, yeah. When we were selected to participate in this project, they sent us a book by Michael Barenbaum called The World Must Know. And this is an amazing book. And part of our assignment before we got there was to read the book and write on this blog. So it was divided up into different sections, and we read it and make comments. And she, Nisha, started to write about the Civil War at one point, and I was teaching the Civil War, or about slavery, and I was teaching the Civil War the same time I was doing Anne Frank, and there was in the back of my mind this idea of parallels, and when I read what she had written, it just crystallized for me, and I knew I have to do this in my class. So I started to draw the parallels between the Holocaust and slavery, and I touched on propaganda. And for example, today, if I had this class right now today, I would be using what just happened to that poor woman at the USDA.
Yeah.
Because
mm-hmm.
You think of the propaganda that was created around something that happened and things taken out of context and reconfigured, and then the government picks it up and total manipulation of untruth, and that is propaganda. Propaganda is never true. So I would have used that as an example. What I used as an example, because my students had brought it up previously, was the idea that we went to Iraq for dishonest reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And the government propagandized that over and over again. So back to the slavery idea, the parallels of hatred and prejudice and racism characterizing these people as unhuman, or characterizing them or describing how we don't want them to pollute our blood by intermarriage. The same in American slavery, that was a big deal. One drop of African American blood and you're automatically not white anymore. So
really opening up these parallels by
it enriched,
by being able to think
yeah.
together as a group. Mm-hmm.
It enriched both the study of the Holocaust and the study of the Civil War and slavery. So, and basically, in my class, they almost became just a continuum. Well, you know, are we studying Holocaust or are we studying Civil War? It's pretty amazing. It was great. So I thank Anisha for that insight.
You're welcome.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's There's a recurring theme, too, from everything from many years of hearing people come back from the Henn Institute about taking this learning and moving it forward, making it be productive, having it inform our teaching, being upstanders, in addition, not bystanders, but upstanders. There's a story of something that Kate Carbaugh is involved in. Is there someone who wants to tell that story?
Yes, actually. Kate sent me an email just yesterday, and it just speaks to how being informed makes you more aware, which is what we want to do with our students. And what she told me is that she just happened to be at the pool, and one of the teachers there mentioned that they're organizing a sports museum and that she had just gotten a basketball pin from 1911. She said the letter that came with it explained that 1911 was the only year that their school, which is McConnellsburg High School, didn't
and,
have...
And where is it located? Tell
that
us.
Is in Pennsylvania.
Okay, thanks. Go on.
And it's the only year that they didn't have a graduation ceremony, and it wasn't because it was a strange year with no students. It was because the valedictorian was black, and no one or someone wanted to honor her at graduation, so they canceled the whole thing. And she apparently outshined everyone so much that there was no way that they could have fudged it or denied it. So what Kate said she and her students are going to do this year is research this lady to see if either she's still alive or if she has ancestors that are still alive. And because this coming graduation year is 2011, it'll be the 100th year anniversary of it. And she actually wants to honor the family, which I think is just amazing, because she said that had she not spoken with me about the African-American experience during the Holocaust Educators Network, that she probably would not have entertained it at all. And it's actually caused her to act on behalf of this woman that she never knew existed until now.
That's an amazing story. And what happens when your antennas are up? I mean, even that you seem to hear more in addition to deciding to act on it, you even notice and hear. Mm. It strikes me, Jennifer, that these are some of the things that the Holocaust Educator Network hopes happens. That people take back this their personal education, this raised consciousness, and thoughtful ways that they're going to work in their classrooms. But I think you all, part of the partnership with the Writing Project is your hope that it even goes further than that. Mm-hmm. Comment on that a little bit.
Sure, and I mean, the story that we just heard, you know, warms my heart. It's exactly what we hope will happen.
Goosebumps, yeah.
An amazing story, and amazing to be able to help heal a community like that. One of the things that we're working on is the way that local writing projects as partners can help take the experience of our small number of teachers who participate in the seminar in New York City and extend it to many teachers locally. So while 24 is a relatively large number, you know, there are so many more teachers out there who we'd love to reach, and we know that by partnering, you know, with their sites, people can really do great and amazing and wonderful things and reach many more people. One example that comes to mind is the Roswell Reads program that was run by Melissa Witt and Leslie Lanner a year or two ago in New Mexico that they completed with support from the High Plains Writing Project, and they also had a small mini grant from the Memorial Library, and they helped to run a community-wide reading of Night. And they had a Holocaust survivor come and speak. They had various events where people sort of were led through an instructive session on the book. They did teacher training. They worked with students. So it really just went in so many directions and reached many, many people. And this might be a good place to plug our website, Elise, if that's okay.
Yeah,
but at holocausteducators.org, we have some photographs and a little more background on that event and some other work done by our teachers. And then we're also very excited about a program that we're launching, which is a satellite program. So we have in California, Montana, Idaho, Nebraska, and Michigan some of our leading expert teachers will be working with their local sites to create local institutes for teachers in those areas and, you know, well, in those states, I should say, and across those states. And those are sort of programs that the library is helping to support in larger ways, but there are other places like Kentucky, and as Jan and Jason will talk about, where teachers have gone back and worked together to create training for other people in their area.
Yeah. And, of course, the things that will happen for the participants personally and in their classrooms are powerful enough, but this desire to make the experience broader and to reach more people across the country, you can't help but feel that, and it's certainly part of the Writing Project's feeling too. So that really is a perfect transition to our next guest. So if we can bring in Jan Houseman and Jason Murray, both of the Dakota Writing Project, because really you did just that. Now, Jan, you were a participant in the Holocaust Educators Network seminar two summers ago. First, just tell me, when you hear the stories from this past summer, does any of that resonate with you?
Oh, yes, of course. Because Jason and I are part of Dakota Writing Project, and there are 9 Native American tribes within our state, I can certainly relate to Paul's statement that our students have a definite need for social justice, equality, empathy, and awareness, and acceptance of diversity. One of the other areas, of course, for our students is poverty, and we're including that in our own Holocaust Institute here. But the like I said, the summer seminar in New York 2 years ago feels like it happened just yesterday. It provided me with specific resources and a network that I continually use to address these needs from the perspective of the Holocaust. And in fact, just yesterday, I was on the listserv asking questions of some of the participants from 2007 or 2010 regarding Sarah's Key. So it's a continual network, I think, for me professionally.
Mm-hmm. So tell us what happened then after this experience for you. You went back to the Dakota Writing Project, and you had your own personal reasons, things that you were going to bring into your teaching, but it did grow beyond that. So tell us that story.
Well, my intent in going to the Holocaust seminar was, because I teach at the college level, my intent on attending him was that I'd be able to teach teachers, or in my immediate situation, college students who are becoming teachers, so I could teach them what I learned and experienced at the seminar. So I would say my first gathering together of my information and my resources was to teach a college course on literature of the Holocaust and other genocides. And while we focused on the Holocaust, I was also able to provide definition of genocide and apply it to Native Americans, Armenians, Cambodians, and Rwandans as well. And the most difficult topic of discussion, of course, was the Native American, because there again, I don't think that my students or many people regard that as a genocide. And for me, it provided an easy transition to what became our Dakota Writing Project Institute. I'd also like to respond to Paul's comment about propaganda, because our students in both college and high school and middle school need to be able to critically address the propaganda with which they're overwhelmed every day. So teaching critical thinking skills, and as Jason will describe, Socratic questioning, they become an area of emphasis in the Dakota Holocaust Institute as well as the content of the Holocaust itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
give us a quick picture of how that institute got formed.
In the spring of 2008, the director of the Dakota Writing Project and I sat down and decided how we were going to do this. And the title of our institute suggests that it was based on themes of identity, on cultural traumas, and resilience following the genocide for both the Jewish and the Native American cultures, because of the strong presence of the Native American cultures within our state and the wounds that have not healed. Jennifer and I have talked about cultural trauma and the generational cultural trauma, and we're still being affected by that. Wounded Knee Massacre, it was not a battle, in 1894 is very recent history for us and for for our state. So after I met with Michelle, we decided that our institute needed to be taught by an experienced Dakota Writing Project teacher consultant who would bring in the writing component, and Sue Morrell, who was this teacher, also teaches in a high school that is predominantly Native American. And we also have the advantage of Jason, who is a PhD student at the university, and to have him become part of the institute as well.
So Jason, let's bring you in. And you are Native American yourself and deeply involved also with scholarship and teaching by and about and for Native American culture and issues and how important that is. So tell us why the Writing Project? There are so many powerful places to invest your thinking and time. So what drew you into wanting to collaborate on this project and put your energies in the Writing Project in this way?
Well, Elsie, one of the things for me as an American Indian that I've learned just in my personal life is that writing serves us many ways, both individually and culturally. And two of those ways are reflection and empowerment. And one of the things that writing does is it makes us think about thinking. When we put those words on a page, we have to face ourselves in a way. It's that proverbial mirror. And for all of us, both the dominant culture and those who are more marginalized or minority cultures, that reflection is there when we engage with the written word. But in particular, for more marginalized culture, writing becomes a form of empowerment. It gives the otherwise voiceless masses a voice. And an example of that would be something like the Native American Renaissance. Kenneth Lincoln coined that term, and he's talking about this wealth or this surge of writing by American Indians through the 70s and the 80s that really gave American Indians a voice. And much similar to women writers of the 1850s, Hawthorne scribbling mobs, African American writers with through the late 19th, early 20th century, started to challenge what was known as the American canon. And that canon debate that goes on in literature classes to this day speaks to that idea that writing gives once voiceless masses a voice. One thing I would like to comment on, too, that has seemed to come up in the first part of the show is that, and that also came up with the Institute here in South Dakota, was that, hindsight's always 20/20. And since the beginning of multicultural studies or multicultural education, the dominant approach has been to start with differences, how we are all different. But I think what we're learning is that we need to start with how we're all alike. That very Whitman-esque approach that every atom that belongs to me belongs to you as well, red, white, black, or blue, and the understanding those similarities and then moving towards cultural differences, that's really the way, I think, to start to build empathy and start to build an understanding for that other that Paul talked about, and to get into those complex things that Jennifer talked about, that writing is a way of getting into those areas.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you mentioned that too, Jason. This is Anishia.
Yes, ma'am.
Actually learned that lesson over the last couple of years in having these issues with parents who would prefer the traditional canon over cultural studies. And what I've learned to do with my students is to have them write a lot about how much they're alike. For instance, instead of doing a "Where I'm From" poem, they do a "Where We're From" poem, and they collect information about themselves and realize that they actually have quite a bit in common when they've thought that themselves very different from each other. So I agree.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I want us to get in a second to some sense of then how all this thinking and this theorizing about what you want to do with your teacher consultants shows up in activities and planning for the Institute. I think people would be fascinated to get a feel for what your Decoder Writing Project Institute's like, but I just want to say, Jason, your comments about these literatures, the Native American Renaissance, and we can say, we can name a number of those periods for different populations where the literature just came to flower, and so many of us were able to learn and understand so much more because we were able, through literature, to locate ourselves in the experience and viewpoints of another human being that we wouldn't have otherwise met. Just leads me to mention that, of course, all the way back to the survivor who founded, whose legacy became the Memorial Library, whose book, Five Chimneys, was one of the very first books to open up the experience of those who had survived the Holocaust, and was hugely influential in fact, inaugurating attention and understanding of what the experience of the Holocaust was. So literature and its role here just seems significant across everything that everyone has said. But in addition to that, this give us a sense of how this, what happens in this week, some of the design of it, some of the activities that you found when you make this translation of the experience of the New York City seminar, which Jan had, your local planning, what that unfolds in the local work.
Okay. Two things, really. One activity I'll talk about, and then another thing that was incorporated were these trunks, and maybe Jan can speak about that because she was very involved with that here in a minute. One of the activities that seemed to work last year and that we're going to include again this year is having the participants view a wonderful, award-winning documentary by Ann Makepeace called Coming to Light, Edward S. Curtis and the North American Indians. And Curtis was an amateur photographer turned anthropologist who kind of fell in love with American Indian culture and tried to undertake this massive project where he created, I believe there were 20 or 30 volumes on these individual nations trying to preserve what he felt was, an inevitably vanishing culture. And one of the things that we do is we view that, and over the course of our discussion and within the documentary itself, it brings up the issue of whether Curtis, as well-intentioned as he was, whether he further perpetuated stereotypes and hindered American Indian culture, and whether he commodified it, or if he actually helped preserve some of American Indian culture. And mm-hmm. so it allows us an opportunity, of course, to write about these things as a means of reflecting. And one of the things that comes up is one of the pictures, one of the more famous Curtis pictures, is of two what he called chieftains, their elders, and they're inside a teepee. And he actually, for this picture, he blurred out a clock and a few other more, quote, modern items to make the picture seem, quote, more authentic. And so we talk about that as one of the things that happens, especially with American Indian education, is that the dominant culture often views American Indians very anachronistically. For example, the most public, celebrated of all the public service announcements is the Crying Indian anti-littering commercial.
Right.
I think everybody can remember that. And you have this Indian, it's the 1970s, and he's in buckskin, and he's paddling a canoe, and he's got feathers. It's sticking Indians in that 19th century, right before they were supposedly vanished, state. And that, you know, really keeps it keeps the idea of American Indians being doctors and lawyers and teachers in the present day. It keeps that at bay or interferes with that idea.
Right.
But another thing was the trunks that Jan came up with, and I maybe Jan can talk about that. But it was a great idea and has worked out really well for us.
Yeah, well, Jan, tell us about that.
Well, the Holocaust Educators Network donated trunks for each one of the participants, and the teachers are filling those with resources. You know, books and CDs and DVDs and lesson plans and such. But the Han also presented each one of the participants with several books and DVDs such as Paperclips and Olga Langel's book as well. But for us in South Dakota, you know, we need to find similarities, again, between ourselves and the minority culture of Native Americans. But we also need to find the similarities between us and the Jewish culture. There is I think, maybe two synagogues in the entire state. There's a part-time rabbi in Sioux Falls, which is like 75 miles from here. And so our students are not aware of the culture that exists. I mean, as far as they might see, the Holocaust did, you know, eliminate the Jewish culture because they have no knowledge of it. And so that's another piece to our Holocaust Institute is making our students aware of the resilience of the Jewish culture and the resilience of the Native American culture as well.
Yeah.
So this is a 5-day, very intensive institute. We even have them attend movies and things like that in the evening as well as the day. So we don't give them much of a break.
I would imagine that was something also you learned in New York City, the intensity.
Very much in keeping with the New York program.
Well, and the intensity can sometimes lead to some catalytic moments of learning, too. So just run through just a couple of examples of some of the things. So you've told us some activities. Give us a sense of some of what you're reading. Are teachers also preparing for their own teaching? Just like a minute look at what else is happening in that institute.
Well, the major requirement for each of the teachers was to prepare a unit plan, not just a lesson plan. And there again, there were some incredible lesson plans. I mean, they did everything from, you know, making 100 butterflies in their classrooms to send to the Holocaust Museum in Houston, but also one of the teachers in a journalism class had her students look at the contemporary presentation of Wounded Knee in like the Sioux Falls Argus Leader in the New York Times. I mean, what was the news like in 1894? Mm-hmm. And there again, I think what Paul was saying about bringing that to the contemporary. What was journalism like then? You know, what is in our newspapers now? So all of this has to do with critical thinking and knowledge of the lesson plans. The unit plans were incredible. And, of course, they work on them during the week, and then we have a follow-up session in November. And this year we're going to have Deborah Batiste from the Anti-Defamation League, who's going to share echoes and reflections with our participants as well. So,
So we have only about another 5 minutes in the program, which I'm sure that actually listeners are wishing that they could hear forever because it's really wonderful and very powerful stories that you all have to tell. I'm curious in our last 5 minutes to kind of open it up. Having heard so many different individual experiences and being able to hear now what the Dakota Writing Project and several others that have been mentioned are doing to bring this bring this experience locally, you must be hearing, I'm guessing, some things that strike you as kind of, it's not the right word to call them trademarks, but sort of hallmarks of the Holocaust education approach. There are many groups that are doing really quite wonderful work with Holocaust education. We know a whole range of them, great people and fellow travelers, but the Holocaust Educators Network has some distinctiveness, and I'm wondering whether when you hear each other talk, if any of you would name some of the things that you hear that you say, yeah, I think those are some of the things that we really think about in our network. Is there anybody who'd like to take a pass at that, some themes that you see cutting across all of you?
Jennifer, could you put some of those together for us?
Well, I mean, the first thing I want to do is, again, thank the Memorial Library for all of their generosity, because when I listen to all of this, I'm completely overwhelmed at what the board has done to support us, and they are really sort of, the silent partners on this phone call even. So I just want to thank them again for all their support, and, trying to imagine what Olga might think of all of this really pleases me too. I think that in general in Holocaust education now, there's an awareness that the best possible outcomes of teaching about the Holocaust would be both an understanding and sort of connection to contemporary Jewish culture, and also a real awareness and increased activism on contemporary problems of social justice, contemporary genocide. I mean, that is, when you go to the Museum of Jewish Heritage downtown, that's one of their major thrusts as well. So I think in that way we're very much in keeping with other organizations. As you said, at least they're really respected and wonderful, and they've been very helpful to us too. What feels very specific about us, of course, is the writing component. I'm not sure that that's, so integral every place as it would be with us, because of our partnership with the Writing Project, because of our general approach. So that piece feels really specific, and it's really nice to imagine it going on all over the country in all kinds of places. And, Paul talked about, or was it Paula who talked about, meeting teachers from all over these places and feeling really enriched by her conversations with them. And I think that kind of engagement with, the people around us and what they bring to a discussion, a conversation, a learning experience also feels to me like a sort of signature piece that's going on both in our seminar in New York and at the local sites when people are doing this work.
And the continuing networking that all the, year by year, all the participants have across the years with each other.
I mean,
so in our, oh, go ahead, please, Jennifer.
Well, as Dan said, she was online today saying, I need help with this particular book. And, she got answers from people from different class years and people I know she hasn't met personally. So that was really nice to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we have just really about a minute left. And so I'm wondering for all the people who are listening, if you could share some of the things that they could keep on their radar, things to look for at the annual meeting, in the year ahead. Name some things that listeners who are now interested could be on the watch for.
Sure, and you're asking me, I suppose.
Well,
definitely have a panel in November at the National Writing Project Convention, so we'd love to see any listeners there. Our past participants will be presenting, quite a number of them actually, and many also usually come and say hello, and it's a great place to come and meet us if you're interested in applying. We're always happy to talk with you. And then also we are rolling out a new website this fall, so that should be much more comprehensive. We're kind of folding the Memorial Library website and Holocaust Educators Network website together, so we'll have a huge amount of our survivor testimony there, interviews with teachers, lesson plans, and annotated bibliography that comes from all of our participating teachers. So we're hoping it'll be both a kind of home base for our participating teachers, but also a great resource for people doing Holocaust education in general.
Mm-hmm. And we hope that everybody listens, who is listening, continues to watch their communications from the National Writing Project. You'll be able to listen to this episode and save it as a downloadable episode if you choose. And we'll be sure to be advertising these opportunities for everyone. And so we really thank you. This has been quite a powerful hour, and we'll be loading those links into the chat room for you all. Thank you for spending this time with us. And everyone else, please visit the National Writing Project website at www.nwp.org for more on the Holocaust Educators Network. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Elise.